This is Audible.
Recorded Books and RB Digital present Sleep Like a Baby by Charlene Harris. Narrated by Therese Plummer. Chapter 1. I was standing at the backyard fence watching the Herman twins, A, play with their dog, and B, water their flowers. It was early in the morning, the only time of day it was tolerable for me to go outside in July in Georgia, since I was approximately as big as a rhinoceros.
"Are you past your due date, Ro?"
Peggy called, as she tossed a ball for Chaka for at least the 20th time. I sighed. "Yes, 3 days." I'd put on my new cerise-framed glasses to cheer myself up. During my whole pregnancy, I hadn't cared which pair I wore, because I'd been so absorbed in my changing body. I'd pretty much gotten over that by now. Lena turned the hose off and came over. I had learned to identify them by their hair. Lena parted hers on the right. Both the sisters were in great shape. They took turns walking the dog and they played tennis. Peggy and Lena were very self-sufficient in the household repair department, too. I found them admirable and daunting. "I was early with my twins," Lena said. 3 weeks, but they were fine. "Where do they live now?" I knew they weren't local. "Cindy lives in Maine, and Mindy is in Spartanburg." "Peggy has a son, right?" I thought I'd met him once. "Kevin. He's in Atlanta, but he's a doctor and a dad, so he doesn't have much spare time." I nodded. It seemed like all I had now was time, but I could imagine being busy. Instead of waiting, and waiting, for the baby who would not arrive. I watched Peggy give Chaka a series of commands, all of which Chaka obeyed promptly. "What kind of dog is he?" I said. It was clearly something. I'd never seen a dog like him. "Rhodesian Ridgeback," Lena smiled. "We got him from a rescue group. We couldn't have spent the money to buy a puppy, but he'd been..." Suddenly, I felt a gush of warmth. "Oh my God," I thought, embarrassed beyond belief. "I can't control my bladder. This is the rock bottom." "Well," Lena said calmly, her gaze following my own horrified stare, "this is the end of your wait, I think. Your water just broke." For just one moment, I was the only adult in the room. In my arms was the most important person in the world. Sophie Abigail Crusoe, 2 hours old. "She's perfect," I thought, marveling. "I'm the luckiest woman in the world." My daughter had just been presented to me as a swaddled bundle. I'd barely caught a glimpse of her as she emerged from her 9 months' residence. Yielding to an irresistible urge, I unwrapped her just to make sure every part of her was present and in order. She was perfect, and she didn't like being unwrapped. Sophie made her dissatisfaction known in no uncertain terms, and I hastily and clumsily re-swaddled her. I felt guilty. I'd made Sophie cry for the first time. My husband, Robin, stuck his head around the door and eased inside as if he weren't sure he was welcome. "How are you?" he asked me for the 20th time. "How is she?" Robin might be feeling a little guilty, too, because I hadn't had the easiest labor. In our childbirth class, I'd met a second-time mother who told me she didn't know what all the big fuss was about. She'd felt like she had indigestion for an hour. Then her baby had popped out. About midway during the 12 hours it had taken me to bring Sophie into the world, 12 very long hours, if that woman had walked in my room and I'd had a gun, I'd have shot her dead. But it had all been worth it. "I'm fine," I said, "just tired. And she's so great, all 8 pounds. I held her out to him, smiling. "And she has red hair." Red-haired Robin took Sophie as carefully as if she were an ancient Ming vase. He looked down at the tiny face, and my heart clenched at his expression. He was totally smitten.
"Can I put a moat around our house and build a 10-foot wall?" he asked.
"I don't think the neighbors would approve," I said.
We'll just have to do the best we can to keep harm away from her. I tried to stifle a yawn, but I couldn't. Honey, I'm going to sleep, I said. You're on watch. Even as a mother of 2 hours' experience, I was sure one of us should be on duty at all times. As I drifted into sleep, feeling I deserved it for a job well done, I counted all the people who already loved Sophie. My mother, her husband, Robin's mother, Robin's siblings, my half-brother Philip, and I felt so blessed that Sophie had been born into this protective circle. Though the moat and fence seemed a wise precaution. Chapter 2. 2 months later, I had put that notion out of my head and was even able to laugh about it. A little. We'd resumed our lives, but with a huge difference. The central core of our existence was Sophie. Her needs, her wants, her well-being. Though we were on the old side to be first-time parents, I was 37, Robin was 40, I felt we were coping like champions, on the whole. Robin would get up with Sophie at night, bring her to our bed where I would nurse her. I'd dive back into sleep while he changed her diaper and put her back in the crib. I would get up early in the morning and take care of Sophie until noon or two when Robin would have finished work. Then he'd give me a break for a few hours. Sometimes I took a nap during that time. Sometimes I did a household chore. Sometimes I just read. Philip, who lived with us, donated the odd hour or two snatched from his busy high school schedule so I could go to the grocery without taking the huge bag of necessities that a baby required. A couple of times my mother came over when Robin had to speak at a luncheon or a signing. By trial and error, we were able to provide full-time baby coverage without extreme exhaustion. Up until the time Robin had to leave for BoucherCon, the World Mystery Convention. I came in the front door carrying a package of diapers. I'd taken Robin's car. Our two-car garage was more like a one-and-a-three-quarters car garage, and it was so nerve-wracking to park side by side that one of our vehicles was usually left in the driveway. After depositing the diapers in Sophie's room, returning to the car for the other bags, and checking again that the baby was still asleep, I joined Robin in our bedroom, right across the hall from Sophie's. Robin was packing. He was so methodical and careful about the process that I enjoyed watching him. Also, I had found something I wanted to show him. Look, I said. I flourished the bouquet of yellow roses. Who sent you flowers? He asked, looking up from folding his shirts. The card was blank. I looked at it again, stuck on its plastic prong. No, I hadn't missed anything. I checked it twice. What florist? He stood back and looked down at the suitcase, frowning slightly. He was reviewing his mental list of the items he'd packed. I didn't talk until he gave a decisive nod. Blossom Betty's, I read. That was the logo on the card. Where's that? He picked up his phone and did a quick search. It's in Anders, he said. Huh, weird. Anders was halfway to Atlanta. Lawrenceton had once been a small town some distance out of Atlanta, but the space in between the two on the map was rapidly filling up with bedroom communities. Anders was one of those. They're really pretty, I said. You like roses, right? Especially yellow ones? You said that in an interview. So I'm guessing that someone meant to congratulate you on the nomination.
By sending me flowers?
He looked doubtful. Then he shrugged and coiled up another belt to place carefully in the middle of the bag.
Okay, that's it except for my shaving kit, he muttered. He looked at me with a resigned face. You have to quit reading my interviews. I've said some weird things when I felt under pressure.
I went to the kitchen to put the roses in a vase. While I arranged the flowers, I realized I was feeling a bit sluggish. Not quite ill, but not really well either. I was glad when we turned in for the night and I could legitimately crawl under the sheet. I was restless all night, but toward dawn I fell into a heavy sleep. When I woke, Robin was already shaved and he'd combed his unruly red hair. I was startled that I'd slept so long. I scrambled out of bed with a hazy feeling that I was starting the day off on the wrong foot. In honor of his departure, I went about toasting some English muffins and scrambling eggs. I caught a glimpse of Philip as he grabbed a muffin on his way out the door. His friends Josh and Jocelyn Finstermeyer were already parked outside. Robin perched on a bar stool, enjoying a cup of coffee and a hot breakfast. The hot breakfast was a little unusual, I admit. I feel I'm doing well to even start the coffee pot most mornings. I turned away from the plate I'd prepared and coughed into my elbow.
"You're sick," Robin said.
"Oh, maybe a little cold," I said. Robin touched my forehead and went into our bathroom, reappearing with a thermometer. I had a low-grade temperature. "It's nothing," I said with forced cheer. Robin looked at me sharply.
"I'll cancel my flight and my hotel."
He meant what he said, but I could detect his disappointment. He had a panel this afternoon with some of his idols, and the awards banquet would be tomorrow night. Ever since the day he'd gotten the phone call from the nominating committee, Robin had been walking on air. For the past 12 years, Robin's sales had gained momentum, but he'd never before been nominated for more than a minor award or two. This year, for the first time ever, Robin was on the highly prestigious Anthony ballot. Only my reluctance to take a small baby into such a public venue had kept me from traveling to Nashville with him. Robin's friend and best man at our wedding, Jeff Abbott, had promised me he'd film Robin's acceptance speech if Robin got to make it. After I'd read the other nominated novels, I thought Panel of Experts had a real shot at winning. It was Robin's best book to date. Plus, and this never hurts, he was a popular and respected writer. "You're going," I said firmly. I stared Robin down across his suitcase. He was getting on that plane. To give him credit, Robin was still dubious.
"I'm worried about you. I don't want you to get sicker. Maybe call the doctor and see if you should even be breastfeeding."
I hadn't thought of that. Sophie and I were a package deal until I weaned her. She would not take a bottle, which made me curiously proud, but it was actually quite inconvenient. Robin, who'd been looking at me with baffled concern, brightened.
"Listen, you want me to call that woman your mom hired, who came every day after Sophie was born?"
"Virginia," I said. My mother had figured home help was the best assistance she could give me. Though I had initially resisted the idea of sharing my first few days with my baby, I'd given in when I realized how exhausted I was. Virginia had had the energy to put a meal on the table and do the laundry as well as take care of Sophie's diaper changes while I took a nap and Robin tried to catch up on his work. At that time, Virginia had stayed from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. for 5 days. I'd recovered from the birth as quickly as I had because Virginia picked up the slack. Though I'd appreciated all Virginia's help, I couldn't say I'd bonded with her. This morning, I figured it would be better to hire Virginia and not really need her than to go without her, possibly essential help. I didn't often get sick, but when I did a good job of it. If I was even thinking of going back to bed when Robin left, I'd need Virginia. Robin checked his contacts list and called her on the spot. He liked to walk around while he talked on the phone. He wandered into Sophie's room to look at her sleeping and then down the hall, all the while exchanging a quiet dialogue. When he came back into the bedroom, he was beaming.
"Her last job just ended, and she's willing to stay nights instead of days. If you're getting sick, your temperature will be going up at night. I'll only be gone till Sunday afternoon."
He was much happier now that he could leave with a clear conscience. "Do we still have the bed she used?" My mother had loaned us a folding bed. Philip had the second bedroom and Sophie the third, so Virginia would have to share with Sophie, as she had before.
"Ida told me to keep it for a while, just in case. I'll get the foam slab," Robin said.
We'd bought it to make the folding bed a bit more comfortable.
"Won't take me a minute to set it up, and if you tell me where the sheets are, I'll put them on."
The plus side to owning an older home, and one of the reasons I'd bought this house, was that all the rooms, including the bedrooms, were really sizable. Virginia wouldn't be cheek by jowl with the crib. "The sheets are in Sophie's closet on the second shelf," I told him. While Robin took care of the bed, I called my OBGYN, Dr. Garrison. Her nurse relayed my questions and called me back in 5 minutes. We had a conversation about Sophie's risk and being close to me and how I could minimize the chances of her getting whatever it was I was coming down with. I was punching the end icon when my husband reappeared.
What did Dr. G say?
He asked. My milk is okay. I should wear a face mask when I'm holding her, wash my hands thoroughly and often, and minimize contact. So it's good Virginia's free.
Do we have face masks?
You had some you wore when you mowed the yard. They're in the garage, third shelf, middle.
Great.
He hustled out to bring them to me.
Anything else before I call Uber?
Can you check the mailbox? I forgot yesterday. Sophie was making her noise, which meant I'd better get in there quickly or the dam would break. I pulled on a mask. As I finished putting her sleeper back together, Robin was flipping through the catalogs and letters, putting most of them in a pile for the recycling bin.
Polish rights,
he said after a quick glance.
I'll take care of them when I get back.
He opened a large envelope and shook out the contents. Several pieces of mail landed on the end of the table, all of them hand-addressed and battered-looking. Fan mail. From time to time, the Holderman Agency accumulated enough letters for Robin, sent by readers who were savvy enough to look up his representation, to throw them in an envelope and send it along. I counted 5 letters and a book. Robin opened the book first, read the inscription, put it down.
Self-pubbed,
he said.
But I like the writer.
Robin sorted the envelopes in quick succession, tossed 2 of them, and opened the remaining 3. He smiled at the first letter, and the second letter was okay too. But his face darkened as he opened a greeting card. What is it? I asked.
Betty is thinking about me,
he said dryly.
I have no idea who Betty is.
Every now and then, Robin got some fan attention that was a little too intense. You're just so sexy, I said, and grinned at him. Sophie and I settled in the rocking chair in the corner to begin our ritual. Robin grimaced before he tossed the card. He put aside the other 2 to answer. Sophie was too absorbed in glugging my milk to note the mask. 30 minutes later, Robin's Uber ride arrived and he left, blowing me a kiss from the doorway. I didn't blame him. I was toxic. Though I hadn't told my husband because he was already worried, I was feeling worse by the hour. The day dragged along. I got a couple of phone calls, one from my mother who wanted to know how Sophie was, and one from the Friends of the Library asking me to donate something to the bake sale. I watched Sophie, read a little, and cleaned away the breakfast dishes. I felt useless. My energy level was at 0. I kept waiting to perk up, but I didn't. Philip got home at 4.
Hey, Ro, he yelled. Where are you?
In the bedroom, I called back, and my voice came out scratchy. I made myself sort the laundry, but I was moving at a snail's pace. Philip stood in the doorway, looking at me critically.
What's up? Robin texted me and told me to come straight home after school, so I got Josh to drop me off. Though I was planning to go to the library to study.
A hint of accusation there. Philip, I said, I'm gonna be really frank. I need your help, and I'm gonna need it until Robin gets back. I'm afraid I'm sick, and I'm getting worse. I can't take care of Sophie by myself. Virginia Mitchell is coming to stay at night, but please be here when you can. This is one of the great things about my brother. He didn't whine or protest.
Sure, I love the Munchkin,
he said.
Except for my volunteer work, I had no plans for tomorrow.
He did love Sophie, though he was still nervous when he handled her. Now he shifted from foot to foot. He was going to ask for something.
I do want to ask you if it's okay if Sarah comes over tomorrow night. She hasn't ever seen Spy, and since we TiVo'd it, I thought...
Sure, I said. I added cautiously, unless something else happens in the meantime. I picked up a load of darks and carried it to the washer and dryer closet in the hall. Though Sophie was napping, the sound of the washer had never bothered her. That task done, I lay down, which was very unusual for me. Being prone was such a relief, I realized I was beginning to feel very miserable indeed. I hovered between sleep and wakefulness for at least an hour. When I glanced at the clock, I knew Sophie would be stirring soon. I dragged myself to my feet. I had better get up and moving. Robin should have had his panel by now. He would be sitting at the signing table. I hoped he had a long line. I wanted him to have a great time, and I wanted him to win. I asked myself if I regretted having sent him off to BoucherCon. Surprisingly, no. Good for me. I gave myself a mental pat on the back. While the dryer did its job, I put a pizza in the oven for Philip and me. A one-step instant supper. He was in his room on his computer, but he'd left his door open. A great concession. Then I heard Sophie crying. I plodded back to her room after washing my hands and putting on a pair of the disposable plastic gloves I'd unearthed, the ones I used for icky housekeeping jobs, and pulling the mask over my nose and mouth. This time, Sophie howled at the sight of me. I lifted the mask and smiled. That calmed her down. But I had to put it back on, and my daughter was not happy with my odd look. I changed her diaper very slowly and re-snapped her sleeper, which took twice as long as normal. She seemed to weigh 5 pounds more as I carried her over to the rocking chair in the corner and got ready to feed her. Midway through, I heard the timer go off for the pizza, and I called to Philip to get it out of the oven. "Go on and eat if you want," I added. "I'm in the middle of feeding Sophie." Another thing Sophie didn't like was me raising my voice while I was holding her, I now discovered. But after a minute or two, she quit fussing and latched back onto my breast. For the moment, I was happy simply being in that rocking chair and looking down at our child. Being a mother was still a miracle to me, and taking care of Sophie was nothing like I thought it would be. As an only child with few relations, I'd never been around babies much, but I'd learned a lot in our short time together. The cycle of caring for her was simple but taxing, as gazillions of women since the dawn of time had discovered. Change her, feed her, burp her, put her down for a nap. Now that she was 2 months old, Sophie was often staying awake for a while between naps. She was looking around her with some purpose. It was wonderful to watch her arms and legs wiggle and thrash, or to see her attempt to reach up for her mobile or a toy. Until this evening, watching her every move had been endlessly intriguing. But right now, I felt so listless and thick-headed, I couldn't enjoy much of anything. I put her on a blanket on the floor and watched her flail around for maybe 20 minutes, talking to her in a nonstop stream so she would know I was close. I was hardly aware of what I was saying, to tell the truth. I was about to call Philip to lift her and lay her down in her crib. She was showing signs of getting tired, when I heard the front doorbell chime. "I'll get it," Philip called. I heard him talking. Then Virginia was looking at me from the doorway. Virginia Mitchell, who told me she was 23, was an African-American woman with close-cut hair. Today she wore cropped running pants, an exercise bra under a complicated tank top, and a thin zip-up jacket, which she was removing. Virginia's narrow feet were tucked into high-end running shoes, and her glasses were clearly sports-friendly. She had a large bag slung over her shoulder. I remembered that. It was just as large as mine and just as shapeless. Virginia didn't look like a babysitter or household help. She looked as though she sold pricey athletic gear at Lululemon. "Ro, you don't look too good," she said. I had no doubt I looked as bad as I felt, but at the moment I didn't care about anything but my increasing awareness that I was really ill. "Good to see you again. Thanks for helping us out in a crisis," I croaked. I began the laborious process of getting to my feet. "Sophie's fed, changed, and she's had some playtime. She should be tired in a minute." "She's grown so much in 2 months, and she's sleeping through the night, your husband told me." Virginia was already squatting down to smile at Sophie. Sophie looked interested. "Sometimes 6 hours straight," I said, making an effort to keep on track. "I'll feed her one more time before I turn in for the night. If she wakes up, see if patting her doesn't put her out again. If it doesn't, bring her into my bedroom. I'll wear a mask. The doctor says it should be okay. The cat has her own door now, so she won't have to be let in or out. Moosey, my deceased sister-in-law's pet, was a sweet but timid creature that had never exactly become our cat. But she did live with us. Moosey came in and out of the cat door on her own schedule, emptied her bowl regularly, and every now and then demanded lap time. I think I remember you feed her in the morning, Virginia said. I nodded, feeling my head ache with every movement. Virginia looked at me narrowly. How's your mom? She been in to see you today? Not too surprisingly, my mother had been a frequent visitor right after Sophie had been born. And she'd also been responsible for hiring Virginia, on recommendation of a friend. Mother's fine, I said faintly. But she and John are at his family reunion in Savannah. She's not even in town? When do you think she'll be back? Couple of days. At this point, I hardly cared. I got the message. Virginia was anxious to identify an adult family member close at hand in case I got much sicker. But she wisely let the subject drop. Do you want me to fix you some supper? Maybe a salad? Or some yogurt? She was settled on the floor beside Sophie. I had to repress a gag. No, thanks. I heated up a pizza for Philip and me, but I can't eat it. If you're hungry, half of it's yours. My bed was calling my name. If you don't remember where something is, just ask me or Philip. Whew, I'm gonna lie down now. Anything in particular you want me to do while Sophie sleeps? I am so glad you're here, I said sincerely. I just need you to be in charge of the baby. And if Philip doesn't put the pizza away, if there's any left, I'd appreciate it if you'd stick it in the refrigerator. And there are clothes in the dryer, but nothing that really needs folding. There's smart water in the pantry and other drinks and snacks. Help yourself. If you need me, call me. The roses are so pretty. What? I drew a blank for a second. Oh, the yellow ones. Yeah, I don't know who left those. The florist didn't know? Found him on the doorstep. If the florist didn't ring the doorbell, I guess they were hand-delivered by the sender, Virginia said sensibly. I hardly cared who had sent the flowers or why they'd been abandoned on the doorstep. I just wanted her to leave me alone. I'm just gonna rest a little now that you're here, I said, trying to suppress the longing in my voice. You don't look like you feel very well at all. Virginia was obviously anxious. I really don't, I said, but I'll do my best not to give you any germs. Climb in bed and don't worry. She leaned over the baby, smiling. I'll take care of Miss Sophie. I could have kissed Virginia's feet, but instead I gave her a more socially acceptable, grateful nod before I tottered across the hall. I had made the bed this morning, which seemed like 100 years ago. I eyed it with almost indecent anticipation. As I pulled off my clothes and put them in the hamper, I realized I was shaking. I slipped into my favorite nightgown. Despite what I had told Virginia, I crawled between the sheets and was officially in bed. I hadn't felt this ill in years. You've got the flu, I admitted. I wondered in a dull, remote sort of way how I was going to cope for the next few days, even with Virginia's help. I was shivering so much, I pulled the covers up around my neck. I'd opened the book I'd left on my nightstand, and I planned on reading. But then I thought I'd just lay it down for a second, and I was out. When I surfaced, Philip was standing by the bed looking down at me. You look like one of the Walking Dead, he said after a comprehensive scan of my face. Oh, thanks. That helps my morale. Maybe one of the fresher zombies from Fear of the Walking Dead, he conceded. I blew my nose and tossed the tissue into the wastebasket I'd positioned beside the bed. That's one of the things you don't say, even if you think it, Bubba. Virginia and Sophie doing okay? They're fine, he said. Do you want me to stay home from the cleanup day? I'll only be gone from 10 to 2, but
You look pretty feeble.
I'd completely forgotten that Philip had promised to help at the park cleanup day tomorrow. Father Aubrey Scott had challenged our youth group to put in so many community volunteer hours a year. He'd pledged that our church would take part in the Clean the Park program this Saturday, in anticipation of the Halloween celebration next month.
You can't let Father Scott down, I croaked. I can manage taking care of Sophie by myself for a few hours. Virginia's coming back tomorrow night.
I'll come straight home from cleanup, he reassured me, looking a little self-sacrificing.
It didn't take a detective to figure out he'd had more plans for Saturday afternoon.
I rustled up enough energy to thank him appropriately. He patted me on the arm.
I'd hug you, but germs, he said.
Virginia knocked on the doorframe awkwardly because she had an armful of the world's most beautiful baby, who was making unhappy noises.
Someone's hungry, she said, smiling. You ready?
I sat up against the headboard and began to unbutton my nightgown. Philip yelped,
"Hold off!"
and exited the room as if he were on fire. I had the mask and the gloves handy, and I pulled them on before I took the baby. Poor Sophie. She must have thought her mother was very odd. But since she was seriously hungry, she didn't object to the mask. I popped out my boob and got her situated on a pillow across my lap. As I looked down at her, I marveled at the reddish fuzz on her lovely round head, the curve of her plump cheek, the grip of her tiny hands. Having her had been the worst physical experience of my life. When I remembered it, I shuddered. But as I looked down at the prize I had received for a few hours of suffering, I knew I would have gone through twice the pain to have my baby. Considering the ages of her mom and dad, Sophie might well be an only child, but I was not troubled by that. I was lucky to have a baby at all, because for years I'd believed I wasn't fertile and would never have a child. I was so in love with her. Big love notwithstanding, by the time Sophie was through, all I was able to feel was my own misery. She was full and wakeful and wet again. Virginia, who'd glanced in a couple of times, deftly scooped Sophie out of my arms. I stripped off the gloves and the mask with some relief and rebuttoned my nightgown. After I burp her and change her, I'm going to put her under the activity station, Virginia said. Let her enjoy some wiggle time. Can I bring you anything? Some fruit juice? I pictured a glass of apple juice. I didn't feel nauseated.
That sounds like a good idea, I said. Thanks so much. I'd always heard nannies were just supposed to take care of the baby in their charge, not act as maids.
When Virginia had shown herself willing to cycle the laundry through on her first day with us, I'd been impressed.
Your brother is a nice-looking boy. Polite.
She had brought me a glass of juice. She stood in my doorway looking across to Sophie's room to watch her having awake time.
He is, I agreed.
The cold fluid felt good on my throat, though I shivered even harder. I rearranged the pillows bolstering me up so I could lie flat and pulled the covers up to my chin again.
We're glad to have him here.
Almost all the time, I added silently. From being the parents of no one, we'd become in loco parentis for Philip when he'd run away to live with us. And now we'd added our very own infant. From footloose and fancy-free to moving in together, to adding Philip to our family, to getting married, and having the baby, within less than a year. That was a lot of life. I managed to stay awake to read, though I didn't enjoy it much. I had to read through the same passage over and over to get the sense of it. What I needed was a book I'd read before. When I was ill, a familiar book was a better companion. But I didn't have the energy to go to our home library, which lined the walls of Robin's office. I turned on the television with the sound down low and closed captioning on, and watched a show about law enforcement in Alaska. I couldn't have told you what had happened when the closing credits ran. Virginia came by the door a few times. I realized I could call her if I needed her, but she was here to take care of the baby, not me.
It took me 10 minutes to talk myself into crawling out of the bed and staggering into the bathroom, where I found some Tylenol and gulped the pills down with a mouthful of water. I surfaced some time later to hear a voice rising and falling. I lay with my eyes closed, trying to figure out who was talking. Oh, Virginia. Since she could hardly be arguing with Philip, especially with such vehemence, she must be on her cell. Her voice was suppressed, but angry. I started to call out to ask her if she was all right, but then I realized it was hardly my business. Virginia's agitation made me anxious. I was relieved she seemed calm when she brought Sophie to me a short time later. I couldn't have told you what time it was, and we didn't speak. I nursed Sophie automatically. Afterward, Virginia, blessedly, swooped down to whisk Sophie away. I could hear her singing to the baby in a very pretty voice, and then I was out again. Chapter 3. When I woke up in the morning, the sun was shining through the blinds. I had to visit the bathroom in a very urgent way. To reach it, I had to hold on to the furniture. That scared me. It was after 7, and the monitor was on the bedside table, so Virginia had left. At 8:30, Philip came in with a weeping Sophie. He was already dressed in jeans and an old t-shirt for his job on the cleanup crew.
I changed Sophie, and I walked around with her, but she keeps crying.
He was clearly anxious.
Okay, head her over, I said,
trying to sound like I was on top of the situation. Sophie, red in the face and screaming, was still beautiful, but maybe on a more primal level. I took my precautions with the gloves and the mask again and put her to the breast so quickly that Philip didn't even have time to turn around. I flipped the sheet over her head so I wouldn't traumatize my brother. There was instant silence, except for the adorable little noises Sophie made when she ate.
Wow,
Philip said with some relief, appreciating the quiet.
Ro? You really don't look any better. Are you sure you'll be okay while I'm gone?
Just come home as soon as you can, I said. I can handle her until then. Virginia will be back this evening. And before you go, if you can bring me some diapers and the box of wipes, I can change her in here.
When do you think you'll be better?
Philip actually sounded worried.
Should I call the doctor or take you to an emergency care place? I'm sure I'll run some more fever later today, but right now I'm okay.
That was somewhat true.
And, you know, if I feel terrible, I can call someone.
I'd been about to say my mother, but she was gone. He looked relieved.
So when does Robin get his award?
Oh, don't jinx him. Tonight, I hope. They'll announce the winners at a banquet.
This is a big deal.
If you're a mystery fan, it's just about the biggest deal. It would make Robin so happy.
You're really crazy about him, aren't you? I mean, you didn't get married because of Sophie being on the way.
On the one hand, this really wasn't Philip's business. On the other hand, he seemed to need reassurance.
Never doubt that Robin and I are a real couple, I said gently.
He reddened. He kissed Sophie's head to give himself a moment.
Sorry,
he said gruffly.
It's just, I would hate it if you two started fighting.
Philip had seen and heard enough arguing between my father and his second wife, Philip's mother.
We won't, I said firmly. I can't say we won't ever disagree, because we do from time to time, but we'll never have screaming fights.
Sure, good,
he said in the disbelieving and long-suffering way teenagers have.
Remember, Sarah's coming over this evening to help me babysit.
Sarah Washington and Philip started talking to each other, which was like an exploratory flirtation late the year before. They'd moved on to the next stage.
If you don't get so involved with Sarah that you forget about Sophie,
I said, because I couldn't think of any way to say that tactfully.
But also, Virginia will be here.
Philip grinned.
Okay, sis, he said.
He was fully aware I'd rather he called me Ro.
Have a good time at the park, I said. Tell Josh I said hi.
Josh, who had become Philip's best friend instantly, was one of my favorite people. In addition to Josh picking Philip up in the morning and bringing him home in the afternoon, Josh and Philip ran track together.
Are you really gonna be okay?
Philip asked.
Sure,
I said to reassure him and myself. But an hour later, as I heard the front door close behind Philip, I felt unsure. Was I endangering Sophie by insisting I could care for her adequately? I could only take the day one step at a time. If worse came to worst, I could call someone. The problem was, most of my friends had babies or toddlers and would not want to be in the same room with me. I could understand that. I kept Sophie on the bed with me, carefully centered as far from the edge of the king bed as possible. Easing slowly to my feet, I staggered into the bathroom to brush my teeth and wash my face. I was scared to shower. I might not be able to hear her cry over the sound of the water. Blessedly, Sophie slept for 2 hours. I didn't have the attention span to read, so I simply watched her for a while. She slept with such deep abandon, so relaxed and still, her arms thrown out. I actually laid my gloved hand on her chest to feel it rising and falling as she breathed. Robin had confessed he did this too, so it didn't make me feel too creepy. I turned on the television, again with closed captioning. I found a daytime channel that carried old movies. The women were all wearing hose and heels and hats. I really disliked wearing the three H's myself, but I had to admit they all looked terrific. Toward the end of the movie, I began to shiver again, and I pulled the blanket up. I was running a fever again. I'd turned down the ring volume on my cell so it wouldn't wake Sophie, and when I looked at my phone log, I found I'd missed a call from Robin. He'd also sent a few text messages I hadn't read. I discovered that Robin was worried about me, missed me and Sophie, and looked forward to coming home. That was all reassuring, and I can't say I didn't enjoy the reassurance. I texted back to tell him Virginia had stayed the previous night and been a great help, and she was coming back tonight. Philip was helping too. I didn't mention the fever or Philip's absence. I wasn't trying to be a martyr, but I did want Robin to enjoy his big day. If I complained, he wouldn't. I texted back. V pointed out flowers hand-delivered, I added. Can't think who by. By whom? If I got any worse, I'd have to call someone. I ran through names in my head, but I hesitated. It seemed very needy, calling someone on a Saturday and exposing them to the flu and asking them to change my baby's diapers. While I was debating, I felt my phone vibrate. Robin was calling. Hi, honey, I said, keeping my voice low.
Is anyone there with you? I got worried when I didn't hear from you until now. How are you feeling? Running any fever?
Philip's not here right now, I said. Sophie's asleep.
You didn't say how you're feeling.
I'm definitely on the sick list, I said, trying to sound hearty. But I'll be better soon,
I hoped. How's the baby?
She's good, not sick.
Of course, he was afraid Sophie would catch a cold from me. I knew I had the flu, but I didn't bring up the F word to Robin. It would scare him. After all, I was being as careful as I could to prevent Sophie from catching it. I remembered to ask him how his panel had gone, and he told me the moderator had run a tight ship. Robin approved of moderators who were on the ball. He'd had a good signing line, he said. His publisher was sponsoring a table at the banquet, and Robin would be sitting there with his editor and his agent. I closed my eyes while he talked, glad to hear his voice, but unable to work up much animation.
I'm sick as a dog, I thought,
and somehow it made me feel better to confess that, if only to myself.
About the flowers, he said.
I was surprised he'd return to that topic.
Yeah?
If anyone else leaves a present without you knowing, let me hear about it,
he said.
I just don't like that.
Sophie wiggled and made a little noise. Honey, I have to go, I said. The baby's waking up.
I glanced at the clock. I realized with dismay that I still had hours until Philip got back.
I heard a distant sound that I realized was someone knocking at the front door. And someone's at the door, I told Robin, trying to sound bright. He said a hasty goodbye.
I was relieved to have gotten through the conversation.
I heard the front door open and close. I hadn't remembered to ask Philip to lock it behind him. Oh my God. I tried to summon the energy to be frightened.
Ro? Ro? It's Emily.
That was the last voice I expected to hear. I was relieved and flabbergasted.
Emily? I'm back here. Last door on the left.
I called back, alarmed at how weak and croaky my voice came out. I pulled on my mask because I could tell from the tickle in my throat I was going to have a coughing spell. And I was right. It racked me. Emily Scott, our priest's wife, was in my bedroom doorway before I could finish the paroxysm. I was as amazed as if Mother Teresa had popped in, or I would have been if I hadn't felt like death warmed over. On her warmest days, Emily had never been more than polite to me, so I couldn't imagine why she was risking infection to visit this plague house.
Oh, Ro,
Emily said when she got a good look at me. I talked to Philip when I dropped Liza off at the park. He says you're sick. I see he wasn't kidding. The flu is going around. I nodded, since I was still coughing. After a moment, I was able to pull off the mask. Emily was immaculate, in a good pants and blouse outfit. Her hair and makeup were smooth and tasteful. I felt even more disheveled and smelly. Emily's gaze was caught by Sophie's hand waving. Thank God the baby had woken up right on cue. She was adorable as she kicked her little legs and waved her little arms. She hadn't started fussing yet.
Oh,
Emily breathed.
She's so cute.
My heart expanded to include Emily Scott.
Yes, I said modestly.
She's great. Can I pick her up?
Emily saw the diapers and wipes on the bed beside me.
Oh, Ro, you've been taking care of her yourself while you're ill? Where is... Oh, wait, this is the weekend for Robin's award thing, right?
I didn't want him to miss his big moment. At least I hope it's his big moment, I said. Virginia Mitchell is coming in at night.
I heard she's pretty good. But you're on your own now?
I'm glad I came by, Emily said. I'll take care of Sophie for a while, okay? So you can shower and take care of yourself without worrying.
Oh, Emily,
I said, feeling a bloom of gratitude unfolding. I didn't bother to hide my relief.
That would be wonderful.
Sophie seemed to be content at the moment, so Emily carried her off to give her a bath and a wardrobe change.
Is the sink in the hall bathroom okay for a quick wash-off?
Emily called.
Yes,
I called back. I would have agreed to anything Emily proposed at that point. She was a baby charmer. There wasn't a peep from Sophie. Though I was reluctant to leave the warmth of the covers, this was a golden opportunity. I dragged myself out of the bed, and in so doing, I discovered the sheets were wet with sweat. I laboriously stripped it. No matter how sick I felt, and that was pretty damn sick, I couldn't stand the idea of getting back between those sheets. Moving very slowly, I remade the bed and tossed the soiled ones into the hamper. My nightgown followed the sheets. By the time I stepped into the shower, I was exhausted. But all my effort was worth the consequence. It was a wonderful shower, close to the top of the list of my all-time best. The hot water felt unbelievably good. Turning it off reluctantly, delighted to feel clean, I dried off as quickly as I could and used another towel on my hair. I was freezing by then, my teeth chattering. I pulled on some pajamas Robin had given me, lightweight and cheerful and decorated with stars.
No matter how debilitated I'd become, a clean body and clean sheets were real morale boosters. By that time, Emily was bringing the baby back, and Sophie, too, looked refreshed. She was wearing her pink sleeper with the bunnies all over it, my particular favorite. And now she was hungry, as she made abundantly clear. I didn't know how Emily would react to my breastfeeding, so I tried to be as discreet as I'd been when Philip had been in the room. But, again to my surprise, Emily sat on the slipper chair and seemed prepared to chat. "Is it really safe for you to breastfeed?" she asked. "Shouldn't I try to fix her a bottle?"
I'd say yes in a heartbeat, but Sophie won't take a bottle. She just won't. Believe me, we tried so we'd have an alternative in case something came up, like me getting the flu. I said ruefully, "It's me or nothing." I recounted my talk with Dr. Garrison. That's why I look like a spacewoman.
Emily nodded and dropped the subject. "How's Philip liking public school?" she asked. Emily's daughter, Liza, had had a crush on Philip, which he had good-naturedly tolerated. That's a pretty normal occurrence. But my brother and Liza had gone through a crisis together. Now they were friends, despite the difference in their ages. Not that the two hung out. Teen society would hardly stand for that. And probably that was their own inclination, too. But when they saw each other, they had a conversation. Not the norm between a 16-year-old boy and a 12-year-old girl.
"Philip really seems happy," I said. "Eddie says classes are not too easy, but not too hard."
"I remember he was in some kind of homeschooled network."
"Yes. I didn't know those existed until Philip came here. I had to learn a lot in a hurry."
He'd landed in Lawrenceton right before his mid-semester exams. Many phone calls and emails had ensued.
"Do you think he'll stay here or go back to California?"
"We're happy to have him. He's happy to be here." "My stepmother is off email and the telephone in a commune in California, and my dad has so many financial problems that he isn't exactly anxious for Philip to come home."
Emily shook her head. "They don't know what they've given up." I was pleased that she shared my good opinion of my brother. I switched Sophie to the other side.
"How's Liza doing in her new school?" I asked.
After Liza had endured a year of bullying. The Scots had withdrawn Liza from the local middle school and enrolled her in a Christian academy in the next town. Emily smiled and it made her whole face light up.
"Her grades are great. She comes home from school with a smile on her face. She has new friends. I worried after the kidnapping."
Last year, Philip and Liza had been abducted. I'd found them none too soon.
"Does she have nightmares?" I asked.
I looked down to see Sophie's eyes closed in concentration.
She was so beautiful.
"She hasn't said so, but she can't forgive them."
"The kidnappers or the girls who were tormenting her?"
"All of them. That's quite a few people to hate."
I wouldn't have thought of suggesting Liza forgive them myself, but I was not as good a Christian as Emily. I hesitated before I spoke.
"I think forgiveness doesn't happen overnight. I think it comes in increments. When someone has made your life hell, maybe you have to recover from the fear and anger first, before you start working on the other thing."
Emily considered this idea.
"Maybe that's true. Has Philip talked about it?"
"Not a lot, but he's actually looking forward to the trial."
Emily looked surprised.
"Really?"
I shrugged.
"He wants them to pay for what they did."
When she sees justice done, maybe that'll give Liza some kind of...
"Don't say it," I thought. "Don't say it. Don't say it."
"Closure,"
Emily finished. I sighed. I hope not audibly. I realized closure was a necessary event, mentally and emotionally, but it seemed to me closure might gain traction as gradually as forgiveness did. These were not clear-cut stages with a beginning and a definite end.
"We'll all feel better when it's over and done with," I said gently.
Sophie had let go of my breast and her eyelids were fluttering.
She's almost asleep, I said quietly. I'll burp her.
Emily reached down for Sophie, and I handed her over along with a receiving blanket to drape Emily's shoulder. With a smile on her face, Emily patted Sophie gently.
You really have to be forceful when you're burping her, I said. And I warn you, she burps like a sailor.
Just then, a huge belch erupted from my little baby. Emily laughed out loud. She continued patting Sophie regularly, softly. Sophie's eyelids fluttered once, fluttered twice, and she was out. Emily raised her eyebrows in query.
Her crib? She mouthed.
I nodded.
Please.
When Emily returned, she seemed to have something on her mind. Maybe she'd had a goal all along.
Thanks so much for dropping by in my hour of need,
I said to prime the pump.
Need me to do anything else while I'm here? Start some laundry? Get out something for your lunch?
You've done so much already. I'm incredibly glad I got to take a shower without worrying about Sophie and without carrying her.
Then I'm glad I stopped by.
She hesitated, then said abruptly,
I never gave you a chance to be my friend. I was jealous of your history with Aubrey.
Aubrey and I had decided to call it quits before he even asked you out on a date.
I began, not sure where this was heading. She raised a hand to let me know she had more to say.
I'm sure he told you he couldn't be a father, she said with startling frankness. I know that's probably what sparked his interest in me, since I already had a child young enough to really bond with them. I like to think that I earned his love and trust for myself.
Of course you did, I said. I can't imagine Aubrey with anyone else.
Emily wasn't through, though.
I hope your marriage is as happy as ours, she continued.
We have every intention of making it that happy,
I managed to smile at her. This conversation was puzzling and tiring.
You've known Robin for a while, I think, Emily said.
We dated before he went to California to work on the script. After he left, I met Martin and got married, and Robin had other relationships, but once we saw each other again, it just felt right.
Do you ever think about Martin? Emily said.
That seemed to come out of the blue.
Yes, of course. You really can't not think about your first husband. Don't you? Gosh, I don't even know the name of your first.
Connor, she said.
She took a deep breath.
I do think about him, but not happily. He hit me.
I flinched.
How could this woman, collected and Christian, have been subjected to such abuse? Not only was I angry on her behalf, I was a little dismayed to be the recipient of such a confidence.
Why?
Was all I could think of to say.
How could that happen?
Connor drank. When he was drinking, he was a horrible man. When he was sober, he was so sorry, always. He kept promising to change, to go into therapy, especially after Liza came. But it would happen all over again. When he had the car accident and they told me he was dead, the first feeling I had was relief.
That's a horrible way to remember someone. I didn't say that well. I mean that he made himself so mean and weak that he lost all the respect you had for him.
Now I understood Emily's reserve. If someone you love treated you that way, it would be hard to open up again.
I kind of wondered, Emily said, if you had had the same experience?
No, I said thankfully. Martin didn't drink much, and when he did, he got really affectionate.
I had to smile a little.
Martin really wanted to make me happy by giving me things I'd like. He was thoughtful that way. He never raised a hand to me. I always felt,
I struggled to express it.
I felt he was wrapping me in cotton batting so I wouldn't get broken.